Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening on this drizzly weekend. But it doesn't matter because we have got someone that's going to put a smile on your face this morning. Well known to everybody in the Riverland and well known to anybody that does any reading on citrus, and that is international citrus expert Ian Tolley is going to join us. And I think for the whole hour, John, am I right in saying that?
Yes, good morning, Deb. Good morning, gardeners, and good morning, Ian Tolley. Welcome to Earth.
Good morning to you too, dear friends.
I come bearing gifts. In one hand, I have a lemon leaf and it's yellow. And in the other hand, I've got a branch of a lemon tree, and it's got a little gall on it. Now, the gall is citrus gall wasp, and I don't think we'll talk about citrus gall wasp today.
Definitely not.
We particularly would like to talk about yellows. Why do the leaves go yellow at this time of the year? And probably for those that have got a lovely old citrus tree in their backyard, it's been there for ages, it's borne lots of fruit, but it's looking... it's past its use-by date almost. And is it possible to restore that tree so it's smaller and more productive than it was before? And Ian Tolley is going to explain just how to do that. And we're going to learn a lot about the growth stages of both the plant, the tree itself, the branches, and also the root system and the link between those two.
Fantastic. So that lies ahead. Ring in with them. We will get into questions in about 15 minutes' time. The number to call is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. If you download the ABC Listen app, that's the pink, bright pink app with a white worm on it, then you can very easily make contact with us. It's easy. All you have to do is make ABC Radio Adelaide your favourite, and then you just tap the app and you work out whether you just want to text or call, and you'll get straight through with just two strokes of your finger on your smartphone. But the number is 1300 222 891. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away a little bit later in the program as well. But I know, John, you've got so much to put to Ian Tolley, so I'll let you get underway.
Ian, we're coming to the end of another fruit growing season, and I suspect that for a sun-loving citrus tree, the challenge is to get through winter without the leaves going yellow. And I brought along a yellow leaf from one of my little lemon trees. But why do the leaves go yellow at this time of the year?
Well, strangely, people have to get used to the fact that trees are very smart as people. And they know when winter's coming, and they say, well, I have to stock up on food before I go into winter so that I'm ready to burst out in spring. So they immediately start retaining the elements that are in the leaves that have been doing such a good job, including the photosynthesizing, and bring it back, and that immediately changes the colour of the leaves according to the variety and so forth. Once you've got to understanding that, you will see all sorts of peculiarities. And John, shame on you, this is not even a lemon-like shaped leaf, but I understand and I get the message. But all plants have that general practice of withdrawing elements. That changes the colour. Don't worry about it. It's a normal, common occurrence, and any deficiencies you might observe are really not deficiencies, and we'll get on to how we can get into next spring.
Certainly will, but it just means that if they're coming in and they're going yellow at the moment, they're hungry.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
I wouldn't say that they're hungry. The tree has already made up its mind that it'll just reserve the elements and store them in its hard woody tissue and so on and so on. So it's quite comfortable. It knows that winter's coming, so it's not going to work. They're not hungry. They go into a senescence and wait until more activity comes. Warmth, sunlight, nutrition, all of those triggers come together when spring starts to evaluate this condition, and then they wake up and start again.
So timing is important, and just piling nitrogen fertilizer underneath the tree is not the answer.
Well, and particularly when it's done, you're looking towards winter and you see the tree and you think, well, it's looking a bit bit off, I'll give it a real good dose. And particularly if you're using artificial fertilisers, because nitrogen in artificial fertiliser terminology really is toxic, because it kills biota in the soil. All that activity that's going to stand you in good stead in spring, when they start chewing up your organic fertilisers, just doesn't happen, because they've already been beaten partly to death by artificial fertilisers. So I'm dead set against using that.
Okay, so but we look at the timing, though. It's not just a matter of if you put fertiliser on at any time, it pushes the tree into growth. There are what you term as growth cycles, and there's a growth cycle of the branches, and there's a cycle for root growth. Could you explain that without being too technical?
Well, the fact is that one of our leading citrus authorities that I met in Florida when he was doing his PhD on this very subject came up with the startling at that time discovery that there's no correlation between root growth and the top. The roots have their own method of keeping happy and keeping the tree happy, and they have terrific spasms of activities. But when you have the line above it of the top and its spasms of growth, there's no correlation whatsoever.
Well, I think most citrus gardeners would be aware that you get branch growth in springtime, and if you're looking after your tree, you might get another growth probably in early summer, and then also there should be another little branch growth sometime in autumn. So what's the relationship between those growth stages and when the roots are growing?
None whatsoever.
Right, so when do the roots grow?
Well, that's the point. And unfortunately, we're not small enough to burrow into the soil and have a look and talk to our friends, the biota, and understand when they are active. So what we do is to feed them gently throughout the year so that they can pick up the nutritional goodies from our organic fertilisers, convert them to a soluble form. And then the mycelium, the fungi particularly, they have a particular adaptation with tree and plant roots. They can plug in, they stick together, and they can talk to each other, that's literally, and say, I've got a deal for you. We've converted all these nutrients that the good guy up top put onto our soil, and you're photosynthesizing, we're underground, we can't get sugar, you can, you're not underground except for your roots, and you can't get feed. So what about we do a deal? And that's exactly what happens. That transfer goes on all the time. So it's not unusual then to think that when there's an activity and the plant roots get fed, they can store it. Just like I said when we started this little discussion, it's already withdrawn feed nutrients down into its hard woody structures. Well, the same thing happens coming the other way around.
I have in front of me a book. It's called Common Sense Citrus. And the author is also sitting next to me. Now, in around about page 87 or so, there's a little table, and it's got the tree growth, and I've mentioned, you know, that's spring and summer and autumn, but there's also a little table saying when the roots are at their maximum growth. And coming back to our problem of the leaves going yellow now, so when is the roots active so that we could put some fertiliser on when the roots are active so that they have time to be able to convert it into the food that the tree needs for growth in springtime?
Well, here's the key and here's the problem, because everybody has their own microclimate. Are you talking about the top of Mount Lofty when it's freezing cold, or are you down on the beach with warm breezes coming in a deep sand with nothing but the organic fertilisers to feed the tree? There are huge differences between every backyard in the country and worldwide. This is a common phenomenon. So when we have to try and put general recommendations, they're obviously far from the real mark, because your spring is something that you have to learn to observe in your backyard. When you see the top of the tree starting to move, you know that for you, you've got spring. Now, if you use that chart as a circle, a cylinder, which is what it was designed for, you can turn that cylinder around for you at your place. And then you'll know when roots move. Then you'll know when the top is moving because you've just seen that first key. That's the thing you see. You can't still see anything underground.
No, but let's try and make it practical from, say, let's assume that your citrus and across Adelaide probably starts growing in late winter. Mm-hmm. So the growth stage, that's spring starts in late winter for a lot of citrus trees. When would the roots be growing and gathering the nutrients that are needed? When should you put the fertiliser on for your spring flush?
Well, I often at masterclasses just say yes, and I see the confusion, and I say, right, now you're thinking about this monthly.
You're saying every month rather than sort of... I'm trying to get you to say is fertilise in autumn.
No.
Fertilise in autumn for spring.
Not going to do it.
Right, okay.
Big point of difference
well,
between these
Well, let me put it
two.
To you this way. Okay, now, fertiliser, it needs warmth. The little greeblies need sort of warmth. Now, if you put your fertiliser on in June and July, the ground is all cold. And how are the fertiliser going to be sort of converted into a form that the tree can need?
Now, John, there are millions of biota. We use that term just to cover every living organism in the soil. And when you've got millions of varieties, they work at different levels, different temperatures, different speeds, different depths. There is activity, in fact, going on in the soil profile if you've been feeding it with compost. And, I did a short-handed documentary in my notebook just to say what how you finish with humus. How do you get humus? Well, you start with compost. And then I made a little story, only about 6 or 8 lines, getting to you to understand that there is a measure of operation going year-round. So you cannot pick a particular point to trigger what you think is something that's happening in your visibility.
Can I just quickly come back to last week? We had another Australian authority on, this time on organic gardening,
and
Tim
he's
Marshall.
A good friend of mine.
I know that. Okay. So Tim was basically sort of saying, look, John, everybody focuses on fertilising the plant. Perhaps they should put more emphasis on the health of the soil and feeding the soil rather than the plant.
Well, he and I would stand together on this one, and he'd be speaking and I'd say, quite right, and vice versa.
What's that little book you've just pulled out of your pocket?
That little book is what carries me throughout. Every time someone says something or does something or a message or an appointment, I put it in. So with due excuses, I've put this back to the smallest number of words to make common sense. So here we are, we're talking about soil, good soil composition and activity. And the basis is humus production. And this dark brown absorbent material... I've got a bit of a light problem here. Here we are. That's better, I'm in the light now. Dark brown absorbent material made over a length of time in decayed plants, dead insects. That doesn't sound much. There are many, many more insects in the soil than human beings exist on the world.
Last week I discovered that 70% of the carbon in the soil comes from dead microbes.
Precisely. So I'm serious when I say decayed or dead thing. They make a huge difference to make soils. I'm not talking about West Beach, which is not a soil at all. I'm not talking about the top of Mount Lofty filled with water, because that's a dead soil because there's no air. I'm talking of in between. So, okay, and when that decays, it's not compost. So humus is not compost. Time is the difference. Biota, we've talked about that, the active organisms in the soil, are responsible for breaking down the composts into microscopic particles, and it's carbon-based. There's the word,
that's
the key.
Right.
It's carbon-based. Bacteria play a major role. Mycelium, Remember I mentioned a minute ago about having the capacity to join with roots. Mycelium transports these nutrients to the plant roots in exchange for the ability to photosynthesize energy into sugar. So there's a transfer going on. Finally, with a long time from, I must write better than this, from humus, breaks down into fulvic, and I often get an answer, what's fulvic acid? And I feel I have to start and say, finally, we get humic acids, fulvic acids, and human. And hence the word humus to start this explanation. So right through it. That's
Ian Tolley is our guest this morning, a wonderful Riverland citrus grower and authority on all things citrus. But Deb, I suspect
we've got some calls, yes.
There could be calls coming.
That's right. Ian Tolley and his little green book, which I've had a good look at. I might get a photo to post on Twitter a little bit later. But if you would like to speak to Ian, please call in now on 1300 222 891.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Nancy is in Kingston. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. What's your question, Nancy?
Mike, I have a miniature Eureka lemon in a pot and I'm unsure how and when to feed it.
Okay, how old is the tree and how big is the pot?
Well, I've had it for about 12 months. The pot would be 30 centimetres.
Okay, so it's in good balance at this stage and you need just a nice big cup. When you have your cup of coffee, this is serious business, you then fill it with organic fertilisers and you put that cup over the top of that pot and gently water it, and that's all you have to do. Just let it roll. At 12 months, it's a junior. It's going to need 2 or 3 years to get settled. In the meantime, you may well have to pot up a little bit more, but otherwise, you're in good shape and you're is too, so have a good coffee after you've done that.
It's had several, quite a few, about a dozen or so lemons, and they just fall off, which I guess is expected at this stage.
No, it isn't expected at this stage. They should be sticking on the tree, and you've done remarkably well to have trees. I'm surprised that you're telling me that the tree is only 12 months old, because you've just broken a new record. I've never heard of a tree producing lots of lemons at 12 months old. So
I've had it for 12 months, I guess.
Okay, so it was a pretty big tree when you put it in the first place.
No, not really. It would be about a metre high now. I've pruned it back.
You know, I think what often happens is people buy a citrus tree in a container from a garden centre or probably a chain story type thing, and it's been there a long time and the root system is confined, and so it's sort of gone from a growth phase into a flowering phase and actually sets a few fruits. Mm. Of course, you take it home and look after it and start to feed it and it starts to grow, and the people wonder what they've done wrong because it stopped fruiting, but the fruit was there to start with, not because of what you did. It was how probably it was not being looked after in a garden centre.
Well, in a garden centre, I find regularly that, quite rightly, they often feed it with nitrogen to make it look happy
lush and
green,
green
and lush and green. And this is not good news necessarily to the home gardener. And that's where I see this dropping off of fruit at a later stage. And I think the sooner that you can get on to that regular, monthly, small additions of an organic fertiliser, not artificial, you will get the tree into the habit of doing normal cycles, and then it will hold on to the fruit and your tree will be fine. So you only have to look to the future. In 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, you may have to put it into a bigger pot.
So let's say somebody's got a citrus, a lemon tree, and it's in a wine barrel, and it's probably 3 or 4 years old, it's settling down, and you say put on fertiliser each month, organic fertiliser each month, I'll underline that. How much fertiliser each month, and would you vary between summer and winter?
No, I wouldn't vary. Come hell or sunshine.
Because you're either feeding the tree or feeding the soil.
We're
or both.
Talking about feeding the soil, which in turn will get to the tree in due course. It takes time.
So a cupful, two cupfuls?
In a case with a, like that, I would do about three cupfuls and spread it uniformly over the area and gently water it in. Not till it runs out the bottom of the pot, because if that water that's running out is brown, you've just bought your fertiliser, spent the money, put it on, washed it through the soil onto the floor. Good for the weeds, but not good for the plant. So be careful about overwatering.
Okay. Please call in with a question for Ian Tolley on 1300 222 891. Now, Alita joins us from Camden Park. You've got an orange question, Alita.
Oh, yes. My oranges are turning nice and orange, but they're also splitting. I'm wondering why.
I can tell you that very easily, because it's a very common problem in the industry until they worked out that if your irrigation, your watering is uneven, in other words, you're watering quite well and you go on a holiday or you're unwell for a week or two and the tree gets, this is for navels particularly, and your tree gets a little bit dry and you recover or come back from your holidays and you give it a lot more water and the tree says, thank you very much. It takes it all in and grows like crazy to retrieve the losses for that week or two. And in the process, the skin splits. It's totally physiological.
Okay. The
answer is roundabout. With navel oranges, I mean, they're starting to colour up now because we're getting some cold weather at last, and that's putting colour into the oranges. But it's that probably late summer, early autumn, when you don't think the citrus tree is doing much. But that's a critical stage, isn't it, Ian? If the root system dries out there, it slows down the cell expansion inside the fruit, and then all of a sudden you water it or it rains, boom.
Well, there is a very much more important thing happening to your fruit at that stage. Obviously, when it starts to colour, if you eat one, you'll say, wow, that's sour. It's not sour, it's a lot of acid in it. And so as that colour starts to change, the acid dissolves, disappears, leaving the sugars, so the flavour changes until you get that maturity. So if you're picking fruit and it's like a rock, like a billiard ball, don't touch it. Wait until it gets to maturity and the acid will have dropped, the flavour comes up, the juice vesicles get a little thinner, and so you actually get more out of it when you eat.
Mm, yum, you're
and
making me
hungry.
And
the climate is so favourable to citrus and the Riverland that the Riverland has built up its reputation on its lovely, colourful oranges that taste like oranges.
So long as they pick them right at the particular time, which they mostly do.
Okay. Well, Alita, thank you for that. Regularity in your watering needed there. Joe is in Salisbury Heights. Joe, you'd like some pruning advice for your lime tree.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Good morning. What's happening is that my wife bought she got given a lime tree, but this lime tree, which has been in the ground for about 3 years, it's grown, it's really given a lot of fruit, but it's very, it hasn't got a rootstock. So what happens is the trunk's coming straight out of the ground, and it's basically got about 12 branches, which are, there's two that are particularly really low on this, what looks like a wild lime tree, but it gives beautiful fruit. It's loaded, I've looked after it with all the right, you know, sort of looking after it in the right way, as to your advice. But when is the best time to prune or cut off the bottom branches?
Do it before spring starts.
Right.
In your estimation, and the time is not that critical. You've got a month or two that you can do that. Saw them off flush with the wood that you're leaving in the tree so that you don't leave a stub or a stump. That's not good.
No.
It's got to heal up. What kind of lime are you talking about? Is it a Tahitian lime, which is the common lime that's available for most nurseries?
I reckon it is a Tahitian lime. Like I said, it hasn't got a rootstock, She got it from a friend, which God knows, when she planted it, I said, this thing's not going to go nowhere. But it just took off, then it started flowering, and it's producing limes. And I'm thinking, like, wow. It's got long spikes on it, really long spikes, pretty heavy with the spikes. Look, it's got, I would say the texture of the actual lime, to be honest with you, the Tahitian's a bit more smooth skin, I take it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It looks like a lemon, only a little fatter, and it's very smooth, shiny skin. And if it's not that, it's something else. And your comment about the thorns tells me immediately that you are a very, very keen grower, and you feed it, you feed it, you feed it. And so all those extra thorns and the big leaves and the massive production is due to the fact that you're overfeeding it. You go a little bit easier, more easily on it, and do it on a monthly basis and allow the tree to adjust to that year round, and you're going to be in better shape. Still prune those low limbs off, do them flush, seal the points, happily ever after.
Thanks, Joe. So Ian Tully's method is a little bit a lot.
Deb, in terms of program balance, I particularly would like to talk to Ian about the rejuvenating of the trees. And that's going to take about 5 minutes. And I'm just looking at the board in front
of me. Lots of calls we're getting
in. So I'll leave you to balance that.
No, well, what we'll do is we'll take one more call, and then we will return to your conversation about that. Joy in Glenside. Ian said he wasn't going to talk about gall wasp, but you've got a question. So I think you're going to twist his arm. What's going on, Joy?
Well, I've spoken to Ian last year about this seedling lemon tree, which I've got in a big picking bucket, black bucket, and it's approximately 4.5 feet high. It's got some thorns, but it's got the gall wasp, and I just can't believe, you know, it hasn't flowered, hasn't produced yet, and yet the gall has appeared.
Well, gall wasps fly in from the next-door neighbours, or on a big storm they can come from hundreds of kilometres, so don't blame anybody. It just happens that you've got the most attractive tree that gall wasps like. Lemons, lemon cultivars, are their number one favourite. So just cut the galls off. If it looks ugly, wear it. Just keep cutting the galls, and you will find that eventually when you go out, take your cup of coffee, be composed, sit there, enjoy your tree. If you see an odd gall, cut it straight away, and after a while it just becomes normal, and the tree will be quite happy, and so will you.
There you go, Joy. You did get Ian Tully to talk about the citrus gall wasp, so well done there. We are coming back to more of your calls in a moment, but one of our big topics this morning is John's going to grill Ian Tully on how to rejuvenate old trees. So Trevor, Sharon and Catherine, we will get to you. If you would like to join us, 1300 222 891 is the number.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And our very special guest in the studio joining us for the entire hour this morning, I'm very pleased to say, is Ian Tully, international citrus expert. What Ian doesn't know about citrus ain't worth knowing, as they say. So if you'd like to join us, 1300 222 891 is the number.
It's the time of the year, Ian, where citrus growers are looking at their citrus tree and thinking, oh, it's been a wonderful friend, but it's past its used-by date. And if you look at this old tree, it's tall, so you've got to get a ladder to get the fruit. And if you look inside the canopy, it's all woody inside. And you think, there has to be a better way. Is it possible to restore a citrus tree, an old citrus tree? And just a quick answer to that, because I want you to talk a little bit about the principle of pruning. And perhaps we might start on that at the moment. There's a branch, and at the end of the branch, there's a bud. And that bud, so long as that tip bud is there, all the buds behind it don't grow. But if you remove that tip bud, the buds below start to grow. It's called apical dominance.
Apical dominance.
Apical.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Apical dominance.
Thank you. Would you care to just explain the principle behind that apical dominance?
Now, you will have people upset that have old trees, and they love them dearly. And so we've got to be gentle with this, because they're going to have to get their gardener out with a saw, because here's a basic fact, and cannot ignore this. By the way, the tree will last hundreds of years if cared for. I've got photos of trees that are 3,000 years recorded, still happy. So on that basis, be careful, John. Okay, on that basis, light can only enter the tree to 1 meter. After that, and this has been documented and researched, it's a fact. We have to accept it. The sunlight will go through the leaf structure to about 1 meter and cuts out. So if your tree is more than 2 meters wide, you've got a dead spot in the middle. And just to prove the point, bury your head inside and look at all the dead wood inside. And it died not because of disease, it died from a lack of light. Okay, so keep that in mind. This is where you get the chainsaw out. You describe to your gardener or to your helper that you want the tree back to 1 meter all the way around, in other words, a 2 meter diameter tree. Go inside, take an aspirin and a strong cup of coffee, and do not die with your leg in the air when you come out and see that this old tree, this faithful tree, has apparently been decimated. What's going to happen at this stage is that he's also, or I hope he's strong, because he's going to have to do a lot of cutting for this big tree, he's cut all the dead wood out. Now, all the little bumps and nodes and nodules over the tree are what they called adventitious bud spots. I'll use that term, bud spots, because it has the capacity to shoot again. Anywhere there's a bump on the tree, it's going to shoot. So if you cut all that outside off and get back to what looks like a near skeleton, you will get a massive new growth coming in spring.
Can I just interrupt at that stage? You say you've got to cut it back to 2 metres.
Yes.
Now, on some lovely old trees, if you do that, you've virtually removed 90% of the foliage, and yes, all you've got is the basic framework of the tree.
Yes, and the first thing you can do is to get the white paint out. And when the summer comes, instead of burning, it'll be totally protected. Any white paint, external, so that it lasts just a little bit longer, because you only need 1 year, and that whole tree will be covered in new growth.
So all those bare branches will start to put up those little adventitious growths.
Yes, by the dozen. And because there's so much competition, there's a tendency for that material to be short, which is good news for fruit production, because at the tip, as you said, of every little shoot is a potential to have a floral initiation for setting fruit. And remember, when these flower like crazy and it looks like it's ready for a wedding, only 2% of those flowers need to set to give you a really good crop.
So don't panic when the flowers drop, or
and you've got
a couple of 6 weeks later, yeah, you've got all these little small oranges and they all drop on the ground. You think, what have I done?
That's right. And it's 2%. And it will give you a good crop of nice, reasonably large fruit. And if you wait until they're mature, you will still enjoy the quality of that tree you've loved for so long.
So come back to the tree. You've chopped it back and it's 2 metres, no more than 2 metres. Yep. That allows the light to shine into the new growth. Mm-hmm. And you get dozens, probably hundreds of these little buds coming into new growth. Mm-hmm. How do you manage it to restore it back to a tree shape?
I don't do it. Well, it's already at a tree shape because we've already made it 2 metres in diameter. By the way, if you are a 7 foot person, that at eye height, you cut the top off the tree. Okay, we're not going to go to the sky. I'm not out selling ladders today. You need to pick the fruit from the ground. And from that point of view, with the intense competition for the tree to refurbish, you will get literally hundreds and hundreds of these shoots, and because they're all in competition apically, they're going to the sky, to the sun, looking for photosynthesis, then you get a lot of flowering, and then you start the whole process.
And now okay, you, now you do problem. That, and not all the little growths are equal. You'll find some are more vigorous than others, and yes, you'll say, righto, and here's this great big strong branch, and it says, I want to be the leader, long as that little bud is still there at the top, it'll be the leader.
Yes, well, snip it back. Don't let any suckers, it's a terrible word, and I'm not happy with it, but strong growth taking over, just get your snips and leave a stem of maybe, you know, a foot, 15 inches, whatever that is, 30 centimetres, and there will be buds all the way that you complained about that just sit there and sulk.
Could you just briefly explain, when you take away the top bud,
yes,
what happens inside that branch to allow the other buds to start growing?
Yes, inside now, they get the tap on the shoulder and say, guess what, you're now apically buds. And because there's nothing at the top, there's no apical dominance, it's back to you guys to get going now and start again. So the trigger mechanism is cutting the top off. You change where the apical dominance is on that twig.
That's brilliant. Mm. Okay. When is the best time to do this?
Pre-spring is a good time. And don't leave it too late that you see starting growth coming, because you want to get and optimise all the growth that you can get to make that change quickly. So if in doubt, start pruning. You're not quite sure that spring's here, then start pruning. Rather than, oh, there's a mass of new shoots, I must do something. I'm sorry, you're getting a bit late.
Okay, you've had it, the good oil from the man that wrote the book.
That's right. You can chop your tree back very, very hard, and the tree will say thank you and respond, and you have a fresh new tree, and after 12 months, you're going to start getting flowers and fruit again, and I think it's just a wonderful story. But again, Deb, I'm
We've got loads and loads of calls here, so if you can keep them as succinct as possible, that would be greatly appreciated. Trevor's in Manham. Trevor, you'd like to prune a mandarin tree seedling?
Yes, good morning. I've got two mandarin trees, which I planted probably 5 years ago. Grew them from a seed. They're bushy. They're probably a metre in diameter and nearly a metre high. Do I prune out some of the wood, or what's the situation with them?
No, you just leave them like they are, because they have plenty of light. Plenty of light going through to the centre of the plant at this stage. So you don't need to do anything. Just let it go, and eventually it'll sort itself out. And when the apical dominance starts to diminish a little bit, then you'll start to get flowering. And the mandarins do grow true to type in general. You will get minor variations, but once that happens, you will get less thorns, you will get less apical dominance, and you'll begin to get flowers on that whole canopy foliage.
Thanks very much, Trevor. Sharon's in Morphett Vale. You want some finger lime tips, Sharon?
Yes, if you've got any tips on growing finger limes. I bought one about a month ago, and I've put it in a big pot.
Okay. I wrote the only report that's been accepted in finger limes and how to grow them. I've been doing this for 30 years now. Finger limes are very ancient Australian citrus cultivars. They came from Citrus glauca, which was the original citrus in the world when we were Gondwanaland and before it all split up. And when we did split up, we had our Citrus glauca, and it went also to mutate into, as well, finger limes. And so every seedling finger lime is a different cultivar. So there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of finger limes. So let's not go that way this morning. All you need to do is to remember this. Do not grow this tree into a bush. You will bleed to death when you pick your first crop. You've got to keep it and have a good solid pair of gloves. That's absolutely essential for them. Hedge them. Keep them only around about 30 centimetres perhaps 50 at the most, but 30 I'd prefer. And at that stage, you can reach in and get the fruit. The fruit is, they're prolific croppers, and when they ripen, they will fall. So just be careful there. Every day, go and pick up the stuff that falls. That's good news for you as a home gardener, because you use it at home. You don't have to send it across the world. So we're not talking to you about maturity. Let the tree decide. When it ripens, it'll fall. You use it and enjoy it.
Wow, Sharon, excellent. Let us know how that goes. Catherine's in Minipa and wants to obtain Cleopatra rootstock. What is that, Catherine?
Hello, Ian, John and Deb. Ian, a few years ago, I attended one of your citrus workshops at the Botanic Gardens, and it was amazing. And at that, you recommended for us, we're at Upper Eyre Peninsula with low rainfall and alkaline soils, and you mentioned a Cleopatra rootstock. And for, I think I might have asked about for mandarines or lemons, and I've looked and looked, and I wondered whether or not that is still the best rootstock for us in our climate, or whether, and if so, where it would be available from.
Okay, it is still the best in any alkaline soil, and I have to do some advertising here, Deb, with Rare Fruit Society, of which I'm intimately involved, and I've made arrangements in shouting form that I provide the members with seed of all of the most important rootstocks, including Cleopatra. If you are a member, and it will cost you as much as $25 for the year, you will be able to get a supply of Cleopatra rootstock, and you will live happily ever after with your lemon trees and so forth budded to there.
There you go. There's the answer, Catherine.
And you'll also receive a wonderful newsletter, which comes out about four times a year,
yes.
Bi-monthly, I think.
And we'll probably open the door to so many other different interests in terms of rare fruits as well. So great
absolutely.
Idea.
Yeah. Even bananas.
And we heard last week, actually, so many Adelaide growers on the plains have got bananas.
Yes.
So quite interesting. Victor is in Blackwood. You've got a yellowing Lisbon lemon, Victor.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I've got a Lisbon lemon tree. It's approximately 15 years old. It's been extremely healthy, wonderful production of fruit. Still producing fruit, but one half of the tree, the leaves have gone quite yellow and sickly looking. But the other component of the tree is very healthy and green. I'm just a bit wondering what could be happening, whether the roots perhaps may have touched some clay.
I could think of six answers to this, but Deb would kill me. She's got me on a short thing. If you ring in and get my email and send that picture of that tree, we can correspond, because there's more in it than I can explain in the short time.
Great invitation there, Victor. Hang on the line. We'll get your number and we'll give you the email address. But right now, actually, I would like to give away a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines. We'll come back for another, just a few more minutes of Ian Tolley this morning. He's just been incredible with his time and his experience this morning. But if you haven't won anything from ABC Radio in the last month and you'd like to win a magazine, call in now, 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's double the fun today. Not only do you have John Lamb, we have Ian Tolley, international citrus expert, in the studio with us, which is fantastic. Take a last couple of calls this morning if we can squeeze them in quickly. Lorraine is in Merino. You would like to move your lime tree, Lorraine.
Yes, thanks everybody. I've just removed a pond from my garden and I've got clay soil, and I've been wondering about moving a lime tree that's not doing very well because it's now overshadowed by a neighbour's tree. Wondering if I add some gypsum to break up the clay, and if I did layering with green waste and veggie soil, or any particular suggestions that would help me to make it move successfully.
There are two thoughts that I would put onto that. First of all, that competition is going to continue. So no matter what you do to the soil around it, your competition is going to love it too. So that's going to continue on. You may care because of that to think about getting a nice large tub. And if you're going to pot it up, there will be no competition from that, but you still have your tree. And make sure if you use a big tub that you put it on legs so that it can have free drainage from underneath, and shape the tree back, and do it on a monthly basis. Just take a limb out now, in a month another limb, until you have it shooting all the way around the tree at different times, different fruit setting, and you'll be happy. You still have the competition, but they can't do anything about it. You're in.
Thank you very much, Lorraine. And our last call this morning is Andrew in Pinery. Andrew, hello. You've got a jujube in your garden.
We do. And the fruit is very popular with everyone who comes to visit. But we have problems with the tree suckering. And I'm wondering if John or Ian have any brilliant ideas on how to rein in the suckers.
Well, on the suckering, you're talking about root suckering?
They just sucker in a radius up to 4 metres away from the main tree, and as soon as a sucker appears, it then proliferates, and you get 4 or 5 little suckers around it, and we've tried pruning them, and we've tried using Basta, and neither of those techniques seem to work.
Okay, jujubes, I've seen them all over the world, and they can become giant trees. So that suckering threw me a little, because we usually use that term for something that's coming out of the ground, coming off the roots. So that threw me. But you've got to be sure that you don't overfeed it, because normally from where they've grown and all, in many places in the world, they need very little nutrition. They're very good feeders. And if you get it a little bit crowded, you can take an odd shoot out if you want to. But as far as I'm concerned, and we've got some wonderful jujubes in Wakery, I would just leave that shape of the tree and keep that feed level down. And when it starts cropping, then it will slow down. It's got incredible juvenility and apical dominance. I'm sorry, we're back to that, but that's what it is. Live with it.
And Andrew, nice to hear your voice. You were talking to probably an international barley breeder in his heyday, but he's got a farm which had a fire went through it, and a wonderful orchard. Could I just ask, Andy, how has the orchard recovered following the fires that went through Pinery?
Mixed bag. A third of the trees died outright. A third are damaged, and we've worked hard to restore them. And a third have been completely replanted. But the good news is that everything is now cropping again, and we have about 65 trees in the garden, and we've replanted a lot with dwarfing rootstocks so that we get a lot of varieties in a small space, so that we get fruit over an extended period, and we're now able to eat something on every day of the year from the garden. So, yeah, it's a long way back from where the fire was, but, yeah, we're there, and
just briefly,
really enjoying the garden again.
Andy, is it better to try and restore, recover, or start all over again when you've got, say, more than 50% damage?
I think we were too soft on some of our trees that we were emotionally attached to, and we probably should have pulled more of them out and started again, because one thing we did see was a lot of suckering in the damaged trees, where the rootstock would survive and the scion would die. And so we did have to do a lot of that, both in the ornamental part of the garden and in the fruit part of the garden.
Nice talking to you again, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Really appreciate you calling in. Thank you, Andrew, in Pinery. Congratulations to Mary in Parkholm and Dottie in Aldinga Beach, who are our magazine winners today. And we've had about 200 text questions through, none of which we've got to this morning, but one is emerging a lot, which is, can you please ask Ian to clarify what time of year do you do the big chainsaw prune of the old tree to 2 metres width and 7 foot height, as distinct from a spring prune?
Right. Well, you can do it. You can do it through the year in the growth period, but I'm thinking it's more important for the cycle of the tree that you do it pre-spring, pre-shooting for spring, because then you give a whole season, the maximum part of the season, for the tree to recover. It's a bit of a shock. If I said to you, John, I want both your arms and both your legs, but keep on playing, you're going to be in a bit of a shock for a while, and the tree is the same thing. So give it the maximum time. I'll still stick to it pre-spring.
And the important thing is the tree has a wonderful capacity for recovery. So that old tree that you've got in your backyard, it hasn't reached its use-by time. It's just a matter of cutting it back hard, doing that probably late winter, early spring, and making sure that the canopy is no more than 2 metres. And just very quickly, Ian, that being the case, should we be growing more backyard citrus as a hedge rather than as a tree?
No, I wouldn't. Espaliers are very good for citrus, so if you've got a narrow space, use espaliers. They work beautifully for most varieties. But I'd much prefer to keep a shapely tree rather than pruning, a shapely tree, in which case you get the optimum amount of fruit coverage over the whole canopy.
Fascinating discussions coming
but
we, from...
But, John, let me interrupt, though, that just one thing. On those discussions, call me in another 100 years and we will know what's been happening to that. Thank you.
Texter says, my parents have a 100-year orange tree.
Nice thing is that information is on a podcast, and I'll say goodbye to Ian Tully and good gardening to our gardening listeners.